And then ordained Episcopal Reverend. He's going to be on down there at Library Mall tomorrow.
O'clock.
11 o'clock. Thank you. Thank you, David. Thank you, Sarah and Summer and Linda today. I'm STD Noor. We'll be talking again next week. Stay tuned for the Funny Boys. Bye-bye.
Wall Street Morning Afternoon Edition, commandeering airwaves from unknown positions.
You're listening to WORT Madison.
With information that would never be reported. Disregard the mainstream.
Greetings, Mel and Floyd listeners. This is your pal Elmer. Since Mel is still recovering from his accident and Pants is on vacation, and Floyd is still on assignment, this week we bring you a vintage episode of the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show from July 19th, 2013. Please enjoy.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I would not. I feel good. I knew that I would not. So good. So good. I got a year. Wow! I feel nice. The sugar runs by. I feel nice, the sugar is fine. So nice, so nice, I got you. When I hold you in my arms.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us as always the man who knows everything, Mr. Smarty Pants.
Howdy.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Done playing with the knobs over there?
At least I'm playing with my own knob.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. I'm kind of excited. How many more little festivals are we going to? Have we decided?
At least two. I don't know. Two or three.
Yeah, two
yeah,
more.
Yeah, we just want to say hi to everybody who, and thanks to everybody who stopped by at the Fête de Marquette.
La Fête de Marquette. And I want to say a special shout out to Sierra. Sierra was one of the, she was a young lady, probably about 9 or 10. She came up and she said, "Do you guys have anything free?" And I said, "Yeah, we got fans and bumper stickers and..." My lazy friends when you come over to see if there's anything free. I was like, okay, so, you know, and this I talked to Sierra, and she's very nice.
She was nice.
And then she came by later, and I said, "Hi, Sierra," and then, which I thought was a good joke. But anyway, "Hi, Sierra."
She was with her buddies.
Yes,
at that
and
point.
Then I said, "Hi, lazy friends." Yeah. Someone here at the station was telling people that if you brought your child to see Mel and Floyd at La Fête de Marquette, that you would get a lizard. I think that was Craniac. I think that's my theory.
Yeah, or Chris Powers, maybe.
Chris Powers, that's a possibility.
Yeah, but
so we had some poor child.
We had a couple people come up and ask for lizards.
Looking for lizards, yeah.
And it's like, and we don't have any lizards. We have candy cigarettes, but that's about it for the kids.
Yeah, condoms, candy cigarettes, but no lizards. Lizards wearing condoms, but other than that.
We didn't have anything this time.
No, we had nothing. We had Zippo.
We just sat there and drank beer people gave us.
Yeah, exactly. So. But no, so what I did was... I found out that Nick, our door answerer here, one of our longtime receptionists, he actually, he's a young man. He's like, I think, 16 or 17, something like that. He was employed here at the WRT sweatshop to make all those fans that we saw. Those fans that we were handing out were all made by Nick.
Oh, very good.
I didn't know that. Yeah, if he doesn't do 300 in an hour, they whip him. So it's very sad. You don't want to volunteer down here. It's hell.
So appreciate those. Well, those were big. We moved a lot of those because it was hot.
It was very hot that day.
Because we were on asphalt and it was 90 degrees.
The biggest draw the whole day was when the shadows started covering the front of our booth.
Suddenly,
WRT was so popular, you would not believe it.
We had the only shade in the whole place.
That was great. But a child did come up and she said, "Where's the lizards?" And I said, "Well, you don't have any lizards." And she said, "They were saying that you had lizards." And the mom was saying we had lizards. And then the girl looked up at the mom and she said, "Mom, they don't have lizards." And I was like,
"You drew her a lizard."
I drew a Godzilla.
Yeah.
And because it was La Fête de Marquette, which is kind of hardcore. Like if you looked around, confirm this for me, Mel. There were some people there that were unnaturally preserved.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like Keith Richards looking types, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I
mean? Yeah, there was quite a bit of that
going
around.
There was a little bit of that going around, yeah.
A lot of disorientation.
Yeah, there was a lot of that. So I drew an image, a picture. I like to draw little cartoons. They're usually grotesquely cute, so that's just me. But it was a Godzilla with the... I drew a Godzilla because the lizard was too boring. So I drew a Godzilla with kind of dilated eyes, and then I had him looking at his claw. And he was saying, "Whoa, dude, I have such an enormous claw." So mom enjoyed it. The child enjoyed it. And we enjoyed them. So we'll be coming to some other local venue here.
The Atwood Fest and then the one in the park over off
Orton
of
Park.
Orton Park.
Yeah. And then in September they have the Willie Street Fair.
Yeah, we'll do that too.
Yeah. So we'll be there for them all.
Yeah.
So come on down, somebody.
And give us stuff.
We'll
give you lizards. Really, this time.
Leaping lizards.
This time for sure.
Yeah. Nothing on my sleeve. Presto!
It had to be Chris Powers. That sounds like him.
That's very suspicious.
So we saw our pal Art Paul Schlosser there. He was too big to talk to us. He didn't stop and talk to us, but he had this very colorful hat on.
Yes,
it was like a rainbow of colors.
It was quite huge as well.
It was huge. It looked like something W.C. Fields would wear when he's playing golf.
I thought your comment at the time was you said he looked like Liberace's caddy. And I thought, yes, in terms of the costume, yes. But the facial reconstruction has not been done, so I'm not sure that that would...
Didn't look enough like Liberace.
There was a kid that was... that I was really worried about this one kid that was going around our booth.
Yeah.
Did you notice? He was a little short dude.
Oh, and Dahmer.
Yeah, he looked like Jeffrey Dahmer. I'm not making this up. He had the same glasses as Jeffrey Dahmer, complexion, hairstyle, the whole thing. And he kept going around our booth, and I think he thought our heads would look good in a refrigerator. That's the only thing I could come up with. So... It was.
I'll have to move the shelf down a little. Yeah,
a little bit for that one. Yeah,
I think it'll work.
It'll fit.
You know, my favorite fun fact about Jeffrey Dahmer. There aren't a lot of fun facts.
Yeah, oh, wow.
There aren't a lot.
There's a conversation opener.
There aren't a lot of fun facts, but this is absolutely true, and you don't hear this anywhere else.
Yep.
Except on this show.
Yes.
But when they
all Dahmer all the time.
When the police, you know. Found out what was going on, and they searched his apartment, looked in his refrigerator, and you know all the stuff they found in his refrigerator.
Yes.
They also found an open box of Arm & Hammer baking soda.
It takes smells away. It really does. I mean,
that's an optimist.
Yes, it really...
I have these heads in here. They really smell. Maybe he wrote the Heloise or something. Right.
I got 82 boxes of baking soda.
Dear Heloise, I have some rotting corpses in my apartment.
Yikes. Oh, my goodness.
What can I do to get the smell out?
Well, you know, every householder knows those little tips that really...
That's right. Yeah, and then just pour it down the drain after the eighth corpse, you know?
Lord.
Oh, so anyway, no, but thanks for coming out. It was fun.
Yeah.
A lot of people stopped by and said hi and
said,
"Who are you and what are you doing here?"
There was one nice lady. She was an older gal, and I just thought she had such beautiful eyes.
Oh, yeah, she did.
Yeah, she had this beautiful cornflower blue eyes.
Lost
in
those.
I know.
Yeah.
And she was so nice.
Yeah, she was nice.
Yeah, so I thought, well, cool. So, yeah. Whom did we? There was somebody else. Oh, we met. That was last week. That's right. I was just thinking another one of our. One of our female fans.
We're going down memory lane.
Yeah, I was just saying, our vast harem of fans that said that she wanted us under her Christmas tree.
Oh, right.
So, anyway.
Speaking of Jeffrey Dahmer.
I still wonder if Sticker Gal's out there somewhere.
Yeah.
Remember Sticker Gal?
Yeah, she used to like you.
Yeah, she had a crush on me.
Yeah, she wrote you. She called you all drunked up sometimes.
Yeah.
Liquored up.
Yeah, she was liquored up. Liquor Sticker Gal.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And
said, in that order.
Said lewd things to you.
Yeah. But I saw her at a fundraiser here at the station. And she came up to me and said, "Do you know who I am?" And I said, "Well, no. Are you a fan of the show?" She said, she looked at me very, very frankly, and she said, "I'm Sticker Gal."
Yeah.
And then she probably saw the tremor of fear go through me, and she said, "No, don't worry. She said, "I'm over that. I've been through therapy."
Treatment.
Yeah, and I thought
that electroshock.
Every one of my exes has been through for therapy.
Yeah,
in fact, at one point they were all going to the same guy, which is really kind of scary.
You know, your sixth session is free.
Yeah,
right.
So. You went with him too. Yeah. Move over.
Yeah,
it's like the couch on Johnny Carson. You know, it's like move down. You know,
time for Rickles to come out.
Yeah, Rickles is coming out.
We used to get letters from that guy at the Mendota Criminal Hospital.
Yeah.
He used to write to us a lot.
That's right. Yeah, so, he did.
And then he said he was getting out soon. And,
yep. And then he thought better of it.
Yeah.
Thought better of sending us letters. Yeah. This is not going to look good on my application for release. You send what to what? Sorry, denied. I think our biggest demographic is probably the incarcerated.
As I say, the disturbed. And,
yeah, it's an expanding demographic.
And Saturday was good because we had a lot of the people with the heat dementia, who were kind of delirious, and they'd come over and, as you say, use our shade.
We should have charged for that. We could have made some money for the station right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So no, it was fun. It was a good time. I like they had some nice bands playing. I noticed there was one guy out. You know, people would be out kind of dancing or jumping around to the band.
Yep.
And one guy was out there.
March of the Marionettes.
The band was really loud, and they were good, but they were really loud. And he was out there dancing, and he was talking to somebody on his cell phone while he was dancing. It's like they can't be hearing a word you're saying. Meanwhile, down in Iowa City.
Our nation's capital.
A veteran Iowa criminal investigator said he was fired this week in retaliation for complaining about the governor's vehicle speeding through highway traffic. And state officials don't agree with that assessment. Special agent in charge Larry Hedlund of the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation learned of his termination during a meeting in Des Moines following a 2.5-month personnel investigation launched days after he filed an April 29th complaint about Governor Terry Branstad's SUV traveling 90 miles an hour.
Neener, neener, neener.
Hedlund said his firing after a 25-year law enforcement career was devastating and that he would take it to my grave, a belief that it was done because of his complaint. His attorney vowed to file a lawsuit alleging wrongful termination. This firing is a real loss for the state of Iowa, as attorney said, blah, blah, blah. State officials denied retaliation.
Sure.
A termination document said that Hedlund made negative and disrespectful comments in emails about DCI Director Shari Paulson, addressed her disrespectfully during a conference call, and drove his vehicle on a vacation day.
Wow, that'll get you fired.
Yeah. It noted he had no prior discipline.
Wow. That seems a little precipitous.
Yeah, so don't pull the governor over, I guess.
There's your first thing. Now, I don't even know anything about the governor of Iowa. Is he a jerk or?
I don't know. I don't know anything about Iowa. Or? I've never even heard of Iowa, actually. But
really? Yeah. I know that their motto is all the corn you can eat.
Yeah. Is that it?
Yeah. And our cheerleaders, they graze. Hey.
Huh.
Web users should be able to tell advertising networks not to show them targeted advertisements.
No, why?
Based on their browsing activities. This is according to a group called the Tracking Protection Working Group. It's been commissioned by the World Wide Web Consortium, or W3C.
Sure, I know those
guys. And you know those guys, and
they're trying to
get these companies to kind of shape up, stop following people around, stop prying into their business. Stop trying to like spring out from behind between the buildings and say, "Hey, you! I know what you've been looking at, and here's more of it." Don't do that.
Does that mean I won't get any of those Mexican Viagra ads anymore?
It's the best Viagra of all. All browsers are offer consumers the option of a do not track signal. Did you know this?
No.
And some turning it on by sort of default. But it's just symbolic because online advertisers are not required to respect the consumer's request. So you can have a browser that says, "Do not track me." And it's kind of like, please,
Sir, could you not track me?
I've gotten so cynical when I see stuff like that. I think it has just the opposite effect.
Yeah,
usually.
Right?
I think, this is the way to trick me into finding the weaklings who are... I used to have a friend a long time ago who was actually a door-to-door salesman, an old-fashioned... I think he sold, like, encyclopedias or something stupid like that.
Yeah. Don't be Sam here.
And he said that they would train them to look for houses that had the... signs up saying no salesmen or no solicitors or anything, because they figured that that was a weak person and they needed that sign to hide behind.
I see.
And so they would just ignore those signs.
They have a hard time with conflict or saying no to people. Yeah. So the sign's going to do it for them.
The sign's going to be their tough guy. So they would just ignore. They would actually target houses with those signs up.
Yeah. Well, I have a sign. Mine says beware of deadly vipers.
Yeah.
Seems to work pretty well. No, it's they don't have to do this, and they don't have to respect anything like this at all. And the advertising industry that is arguing, because you know the advertising industry, they're our friends. They've said that behavior tracking, that's what it's called, is a necessary part of free web services.
Yeah.
So I'd rather pay for web services myself. Thank you very much, but that's just me. In the latest of several proposals, the advertising people have said that they wanted to use behavioral data after scrubbing out certain information. So you can trust them. They'll get some information from you. There's all the stuff that they can do to basically read your mind. But then if there's like a little thing here or there.
Yeah, like those websites with the sheep and stuff.
Yeah, that they'll take out. Yeah. That's because there's nobody selling those.
Good point. There's no money in this.
That's a service we don't offer.
We're not a niche.
Lots of consumer groups and so on have been opposed to this this proposal from the advertising people, and so that's why this this tracking protection working group they've been talking for 2 years about this, 2 years to basically say that we should have a do not track standard that really actually works. That if you say you don't want to be tracked, you don't have they have to respect that. So. I'm sure that's going to happen.
That'll cost
right off.
That'll cost us jobs or something.
It'll cost us jobs. Yeah. Because, you know, we won't be able to beat baby seals or something if they don't. You know, I mean, there's some good reason. I don't know. It's all linked. I don't know how it works. But.
On sort of a related note, this out of Washington, D.C., which is Iowa's capital.
Yeah.
Chances are your local or state police departments have photographs of your car in their files, noting where you were driving on a particular day, even if you never did anything wrong. Using automated scanners, law enforcement agencies across the country have amassed millions of digital records on the location and movement of every vehicle with a license plate.
Oh, don't you love it?
According to a study published by the ACLU. Affixed to police cars, bridges, or buildings, the scanners capture images of passing or parked vehicles and note their location, uploading that information into police databases.
Sure.
Departments keep the records for weeks or years, sometimes indefinitely.
Yep. And the Republicans take over, they're just going to look for all the Prius owners, and then those would be the ones they'll round up first.
And the cars with the coexist bumper stickers.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're deadly eco-terrorists.
They need
to hire somebody from Arizona to shoot them, I think. So.
My car goes down the highway, just screams Obama. You know? I mean,
give me your guns.
the president hit it right on the head again this week with the George Zimmerman situation, the Trayvon Martin. You know, this is what you expect to have happen when you illegally empower people to be a private police force. Then everybody's paranoias, prejudices, and other freaky things that are going on in their head, suddenly they have the right. I mean, once you have the system like they have down in Florida there, where you can say it was reasonable for me to think I can defend myself in this way.
After following the guy.
Yeah, I mean, the police told him to step down. He didn't do it. I mean, it's ridiculous, but their law basically is an invitation for vigilantism. So, you know, this is we're reaping the fruits of this. And the prosecution had a really hard case given the way the law was set up. So the president said something about this, you know, the scourge of gun violence. And I think that's really what we're talking about here. You know, people's individual feelings of persecution, wherever they come from, rational or irrational, what's going on, it doesn't make a difference because you're giving them a gun. Mm-hmm. I mean, think of how bad police departments are for doing the wrong thing. And those people are trained.
Right? They're trained. They have all kinds of regulations. Yeah. They have they have people, you know, a chain of command, people watching them. They have to be, you know,
so here's
responsible.
A better solution. Let's have every person in the world have a gun. That will definitely be better. Definitely.
Like a lot of these things have been tried before.
Yeah.
You know, for thousands of years.
Yeah.
And we know exactly how they work.
Right. Yep. Yep. Yep, we do. Yeah. In fact, there are areas of the world where that's still going on.
Yeah.
I mean, people are just vendetta all the time.
Right.
You know, 24/7. Hatfield and McCoy, you know. I mean, that's...
You know, we have this American mythology about the Old West. I mean, it really is a very powerful part of our national image, our culture.
Yeah.
And but in the real world, Old West,
yeah,
they were happy when they got the gunslingers out and they got rid of the guns,
right,
and
yep,
and, and they had some law and order and, right, and then some stability and peace there. That was,
right,
like a really, really,
yep,
good thing,
yep,
when people,
yep,
stopped shooting each other in the street.
Right, yeah. And, because then nice ladies could come to town. Not just Miss Kitty. But
she,
nice ladies.
She was a dancer, wasn't she?
She was, I think she was.
Yeah.
She was a barkeep.
Yeah. There's actually a Wisconsin connection with the George Zimmerman trial. There's one going on in Milwaukee.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Opening yep, statements this week. In a murder case in which a 76-year-old white man is accused of gunning down an unarmed black teenager.
Yep.
John Henry Spooner, 76, is charged with first-degree intentional homicide in the shooting death of his neighbor, Darius Simmons, who is 13. Spooner doesn't deny shooting the boy, but his lawyers have entered a plea of not guilty due to a mental illness that impaired his ability to know right from wrong. Attorneys and the judge were concerned that the Florida case would unduly influence the jury.
He said that the kid had stolen weapons from his house. Here's the other shoe dropping on the whole weapons for everybody. Where do you think criminals get weapons from? They steal them from morons like John Henry Spooner. You know what I mean? You got to cash in your house because you're going to protect yourself. And actually, you might as well just put a big sign on the door that says, weapons here, everybody. Come and get yours.
Yeah.
But he accused this kid of basically stealing the weapons. And when they looked at the kid's house, the police went to his house after this happened, and there was nothing there. So, yeah. Who knows? It's just horrid. That's one of those ones where I just get kind of choke on my own bile there.
Yeah.
Here's a little interesting fun fact. The gap in life expectancy between black and white Americans. It's now at its narrowest since the federal government started systematically tracking it in the 1930s. It's at its narrowest, but that's 4 years difference. If you are a white person or a black person, your life expectancy is different by about 4 years. So, let's see. Life expectancy for African Americans in the United States rose to 75 years in 2010 or 2010, up from 64 years in 1970. For whites, it rose to 79 years from 72 years in the same period. Interestingly, in 1930, life expectancy for African Americans was 48, lived to be about 48.
Wow.
And 60 for whites. Yeah. So, it's gotten better. But it sounds like to me, the reason why it's gotten better, the gap is not as big, is if you look at what the years are for the whites in the United States, 79 is actually pretty low by European standards for people to survive. I mean, the ages are higher there. So what you're seeing is less healthy whites mean the gap between the gap between blacks and whites is narrowing. So.
And we're working on that more.
And we're working on that day, too, so. Every day. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, a different way to look at that is state by state.
Oh, yeah.
The same numbers. And,
yes.
And I know this will be a shock.
Yeah.
A shock.
Wait, I gotta prepare myself.
If you live in the South.
Yeah.
Not so good.
Yeah. Get that federal government out of my life.
Yeah. But
so I can eat some more French fried Snickers bars or whatever. Whatever's on the menu today.
And give me my scooter. if you're 65 and living in Hawaii, odds are you'll live another 21 years. And,
wow.
And, but
let's all move to Hawaii.
We'll sink the island. All of us tubbies move there.
That's what I'm getting out of that story.
And you'll likely be in pretty good health for all but like the last 5 years. When,
yeah,
you know,
that's the way it usually works.
Yeah. But so Hawaii tops the chart. On the bottom.
Yeah. Alabama. Mississippi.
There you go.
Ding, 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 ding.
That's Wisconsin's state motto, no, actually. Thank God for Mississippi. retirement age Mississippians fared the worst, with only about 17 more years remaining.
Wow.
And nearly seven of them in poorer health. But, and it tracks very, very strongly the South. The Midwest had lower numbers, too, but that's not a surprise because, you know, we're kind of dumb here and we eat and drink and smoke a lot.
Preferably all at once.
Yeah.
The trifecta.
I need more orifices.
I've run out of orifices. I think I can open a little hole here in my cheek, maybe. For
drill
something.
A hole in my head. Yeah. Pour some brandy in there.
Yeah, brandy. Hey, I went to the, they have an exhibit at the Wisconsin Historical Society Museum.
Yeah.
where it's like things that are invented in Wisconsin. And there's lots of interesting things that were invented in Wisconsin. Of course, you mean like shipped to some other state. But they were talking about brandy, and you know that we have this gigantic. We consume something like 60% of all the brandy in the country or something outrageous that. And was it that high? It was pretty high.
It's something like that.
Yeah. And I was like, what is the deal with the brandy? And then I started thinking about Jeffrey Dahmer again. And I thought, well, you know, we've got two very famous cannibals in Wisconsin. And I think it's all that brandy consumption makes them nice and tasty.
Is that
it? Nice marinated. Mm. You know? Certain piquancy there.
You know, but, you know, we're practical folk up here. We're not just serial killers. We eat what we kill.
Not just serial killers.
States at the bottom of the list, as I said, Mississippi, Kentucky, West Virginia, and Alabama.
Yeah.
Down there in the bottom five.
Well, you know, and I told you about West Virginia. I mean, they're breeding a new human down there. I mean, I'll go to visit my mother's
breeding
hospital.
A new human?
They're breeding a new human. I mean, I've never seen people so large. They really are very, very large.
Yeah.
And so I looked it up online, and Huntington, West Virginia has the second highest rate of obesity in the United States for any major city, and they have the highest rate of high blood pressure, hypertension. And so that was just amazing to me. So they have this hospital where my mother was staying for a while. She's in a different facility now. But it's like number one in heart attack prevention in the region. And I thought, well, if I was trying to like corner a market and something medically, that would probably be what I go for in this area.
Yeah.
So yeah. But it's very unusual. And but it's just its diet and you know, but people are not very wealthy there.
Poverty and obesity
food.
Track each other very strongly.
Yeah, industrial food is not good for you at all.
Yeah,
so,
So, and a lot of the poor neighborhoods, there aren't decent stores, you know.
Yeah, they don't have the farmer's market, surprisingly.
No, exactly.
They have a lot of farmers, but no farmer's market, you know. It's just...
They'll grow tobacco or something. But,
yeah.
States with the best numbers included Florida, a magnet for healthy retirees, it says, as well as Connecticut and Minnesota.
Oh, yeah. The thing that tracks well with that is dental health. Connecticut has the best dental health in the country. Kentucky, the worst.
Yeah.
Yep. Actually, there's 6 million people, 7 million people in Kentucky, and there's actually about 8,000 teeth.
Some are shared, though.
That was my last memory of being in Kentucky.
Yeah.
Anyway. Hey, a secret court overseeing government surveillance programs has sided with Yahoo. Yahoo, we all trust Yahoo, right? And has asked the Obama administration, well, it's actually ordered the Obama administration to declassify and publish a 2008 court decision justifying PRISM. Remember PRISM? That's the data collection program that Edward Snowden's been telling everybody about. So the judge, his name is Reggie Walton, and that's no secret. He issued the ruling this Monday, and the government is expected to decide by August 26th which parts of the decision may be published.
No, you can't publish that.
No, I'm sorry.
Everybody knows that. Another Florida story. You can't actually recall a U.S. senator in Florida. There's no mechanism for that.
There's
no law.
Sure.
So you know what the Tea Party activists are trying to do down there?
I can't imagine.
Trying to recall Marco Rubio.
Well, at least they're not trying to shoot him. That's good. Knocking him down and shooting him.
Radio host Chris Ann Hall says she and a group of other conservatives are helping draft legislation that would allow senators in the state to face recall elections.
Boy, what's old Marco Rubio been doing?
I don't know. He's too thirsty or something. I don't know. But he said that, among other things, they're ticked off at Rubio's support for the immigration bill.
What'd they expect?
They're angry because they feel they've been deceived.
Oh, well.
So they want to recall him.
They should be the only one to deceive anybody.
Yeah. That was our thing.
That was our thing. We were doing that long before you were.
Now, up here, where we actually have a recall law, and we had about a million people sign the recall petition for Governor Walker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And after that happened, our fine friends up the street there tried to get rid of the recall laws.
There's no principle involved in this. It's whatever's politically expedient. So, whatever you can do to get power. Yeah. This week, you know, the Senate was talking about pulling back on the filibuster. And it made me realize, I mean, what the Republicans do, and they do really well, is they find all the weak points. It's almost like they've got like a giant fire hose of rage. And they spray the side of the House and they find where the little cracks are. And then when they're the crack, they find the crack, they just blow that fire hose right into that crack. And that's what with the Senate, with our election laws, with the you know, I mean, the way the Supreme Court is set up. I mean, there's just every little place where there's a little crack in the system, they go for that little crack. Mm-hmm. And you know, and with the impeachment thing, finally, or the impeachment, the filibuster thing, they finally, you know, somebody has come back and said, look, you can't keep doing this. You can't keep holding up the appointment of government officials so you can shut down the whole government. I mean, that we're just not going to let you do that. But there was a rare moment when to see Harry Reid and the Democrats
His spine grew three sizes that day.
It's like, why didn't you guys do this? Like, there's no other. We have the worst legislative body of any of the developed world. I'm sorry. There's not a single legislative body in the world that has the rules that the Senate has. Not one. I mean, unless you're talking about some, you know, crazy dictatorship somewhere. I mean, maybe Saudi Arabia has a system like this. I don't know. But, I mean, we do not have this. Nobody else has this. We have one of the smallest lower houses relative to population of any country. And we haven't changed the size of the House of Representatives since 1911.
Must we give Wyoming the same number of senators as California?
They have 70 times the voting power of the largest state, Wyoming does. It's ridiculous. And then people, we used to have, and Wisconsin used to have 12 representatives. Now we have 7. And our population has only grown in the last 100 years. But we keep losing them because crazy places like Wyoming and North Dakota and so on always get one representative no matter what. The other states are growing. And so the ones that are
the
balanced states in the middle, they get squeezed out. So we have less representation than Wisconsin does than we did 100 years ago. So is it any wonder that there's a polarized legislative body? I mean, yes, it just keeps getting worse and worse. The Senate is now, here's the crazy thing. The Senate, some political scientists have said, is now more competitive than the House, even though you have to spend millions of dollars. And the reason why is because they can't change the district.
Yeah.
They'd have to create new states or make the states different sizes, but they can gerrymander all the House seats. And so even though most people voted for a Democratic representative across the United States, 1.5 million more votes in the last election for Democrats and Republicans in the House, there are 32 Senate or House seats that for Republicans over Democrats.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even in Wisconsin, we see that we've got one party rule here, and, yeah. and we see how that works. I mean, it's just total rubber stamp.
Yeah.
And in the last election, more people voted for Democrats in the state by quite a bit. It was like 53 or 54% of the people voted for Democrats.
And here's the thing, because they've locked it into place now for the next 10 years, I'm thinking of going into the rubber stamp business.
Yeah.
If you want to get on the ground floor with this, Mel, because I can get you in on this, they're going to be wearing out those rubber stamps. You know what I mean?
That's
it's
true.
Like they're using them so much now that those babies, they don't last forever.
No.
You know?
And they're not made like they used to be.
Not the way they used to be. Yeah. You know?
Hey, you're listening to the Mel and Floyd Show here on WORT 89.9 on the FM. We're your community-sponsored radio station, aren't we?
We are indeed.
We are. So you might also be listening on our web page, our website at WORTFM.org.
Yep.
Or you might be listening in the future.
Tales of tomorrow.
On your moving sidewalks when your jetpack.
Exactly.
Because we put this show and lots of other shows up on there.
What other shows we put in pod form.
And everything except Craniac, I think.
Oh, okay. All right.
But
take those pods and just put them next to your bed at night.
Put them on your back.
No,
your,
don't worry
back
about
of your
that.
Neck.
Everything will be fine.
Yeah, just don't feed them after midnight, I think is what you do. So anyway, Mark has some announcements he wants to play, and then we're going to come back in 2 or 3 minutes. I'm going to talk about where the jobs are.
Where are the jobs?
Well, I'll tell you in 2 or 3 minutes.
Okay.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in home brewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in-Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Dane Dances, a free, family-friendly event at the Monona Terrace rooftop every Friday evening in August. This week features Sangamam at 6 p.m. and VO5 at 8 p.m. Carry-in chairs, blankets, and baskets permitted. No carry-in alcohol. More information on the Dane Dances concert series is available at danedances.org.
WRT is hosting a folk and country spectacular on Saturday, August 23rd from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Burr Oak, 2262 Winnebago Street, as part of our 50th birthday series. The show features some of your favorite morning folk and country hosts. Chris Powers from Mud Acres will host the event, and he's joined by the Grazers featuring Green Morning Radio's Brian Hirsch. Nate Gibson from Back to the Country will be sitting in on the fun, and Bill and Bobby Malone will top off the afternoon with a special performance. You do not want to miss this great array of talent. Tickets are $20 and can be purchased at the Burr Oak website or at their box office during business hours. That's the WORT Folk and Country Spectacular on Saturday, August 23rd from 1 to 4. We hope to see you there.
If ever I have had a friend, you have been that friend to me.
Get past the people, get past the hitman.
And we're back. Okay, I said I was going to tell you where the jobs are.
Okay, where are they? Well, what kind of jobs?
Well, that's not in this, but I think we know what kind of jobs. But
sleeve jobs?
This is from ADP. They're like that business consulting.
Oh, so definitely it is.
This isn't some crazy government thing. This is the private sector telling you where the jobs are. They do like payroll and business consulting and things. So I mean, they actually have a vested interest in having real information because they want to be able to sell, you know.
But that's not what they tell the Tea Party, right?
Well,
they're not going to actually tell any.
No, this is kind of like when the insurance company says, "I'm not going to insure you because of global warming."
Yeah,
you know, they've got skin in the game here.
So. Yeah, forget what we say in the Wall Street Journal editorial page. Yeah. Read page 9.
Your writer there.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so this is the ADP June jobs report, most recent one just came out
hot off the press.
And there were nationwide, I clipped off the totals here, but if I remember right, it was something like 188,000 new jobs.
All right.
Okay.
That's a few.
And just
not enough, but it's a few.
Now they have a list of a bunch of states here. They looked at 29 key states here.
Okay.
And who created these kinds of jobs, or what, how many jobs they created in June.
Okay.
California, about 31,000.
Okay.
Illinois, about 8,500.
All right.
Massachusetts, about 3,500.
Okay.
Michigan, 4,300.
Sure.
Minnesota, 2,500. New York, 10,000.
All right. They have a lot of people in New York.
Texas was actually tops the list here at 23,000. But we know their strategy is like, you know, low-paying jobs and, no benefits. And then, then you die.
Do you want fries with that?
Yeah. Okay. So Texas, 23,000. New York, 10,000. California, 31,000.
Okay, yeah. Sounds good.
Washington State, 6,000.
Eh, not great, but still okay.
Wisconsin, 980.
And they're all working for Ron Johnson.
980.
Wow.
Washington, D.C. only had 720, but...
That's not a state.
That's not a state, yeah.
But, as the Republicans keep reminding us.
It says 29 states plus the District of Columbia. So out of all the states, Wisconsin, dead last in the ADP jobs creation report.
But the actual point of the governor's job creation program is, of course, to take your money and give it to his friends. that's the job that I was talking about.
That's a different kind of job.
Yeah. Exactly. So,
now, last week in the Isthmus, this was a week ago. I didn't get a chance to talk about this last week, but
local Madison Independent.
Yeah, for those of you listening in Europe.
Yeah, in Antarctica.
You might not know.
Yeah.
Our local stuff here, but there was a column that really was more or less a big steaming pile of cow flop.
Yeah,
it was called. It was by a guy named Larry Kaufman, who's an economic consultant based in Madison.
Oh, very good. And so he must know something.
Larry's opinion says Wisconsin business climate is improving.
Sure, it is. You can tell because there's not as many people being employed.
It keeps salaries down.
Yeah, right. The money's coming right from the taxpayer to the business community, so of course the climate's improving.
A lot more people competing for those low-income jobs.
Yeah, everything's hunky-dory.
Okay, so, but I saw that, and I go, okay, well, I'll read that.
You're an open-minded guy.
I'm open-minded. I like information. Yeah. I thought, well, maybe Larry's got some information.
Larry's on to something.
You know, and, maybe Larry's kind of, he's an economic
consultant.
Consultant.
Yes.
So I figured
people ask him questions.
He knows his stuff.
Yeah,
so,
he looks into his crystal ball and what does he say?
So I thought Larry would look at it. So I thought maybe Larry would explain to me what's really going on in the Wisconsin economy. And seriously, I was looking at this open-mindedly.
Okay.
And so then I read it, and it was all just total rhetoric. First of all, he talks about how a lot of people criticize Wisconsin because they're lagging behind Minnesota in economic development and jobs and stuff. And his answer is, well, it's always been the case. And we did that with when Jim Doyle was governor, too. So, okay, so what's different then about this magic plan to create jobs here? Okay, so
Minnesota's just a big bully.
Yeah, yeah.
You're a big neener head.
No big deal there. So okay, so then he talks about how Wisconsin has been hampered by poor business environment for decades.
Yeah.
You know,
we haven't been dancing around the business people sufficiently, praising them in rituals.
And he doesn't say where this is coming from, but he says that the state's ranking doesn't explain where that ranking comes from, but
sure,
it says that's really jumped up. It used to be it was 24th, and now it's 17th in whatever ranking this secret ranking. So I'm guessing it's probably those CEO polls. You know,
sure.
A lot of times they like to poll the CEOs and ask them what they think, and so.
Remember a few years ago when they ranked Wisconsin near the bottom in business climate,
mm-hmm.
and then when you found out this was something I remember there was about maybe 4 years ago. And they looked at the organization that had done the ranking, and they found out that Mississippi was number one. And then somebody got freaked out because that was obviously a black eye on the veracity or value of the polling device. And so they fudged a little bit, and it ended up being Florida then. So yeah, if you tell me, you know, where can I go where people will, you know, tote me around on a big pink pillow and give me, you know, public money for doing absolutely crap.
We all love that.
Yeah, well, mean, of course we would.
Yeah, but
stroke me some more.
So anyway, so Larry mentions this ranking, but still, it doesn't explain, you know, why the economy is still stagnant and why we're you know, on that ADP list where we're so far down the list there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But okay, so then he says, well, you know, but and this is true. The jobs are kind of a lagging indicator of the economy.
He's right about
that. So maybe the economy is kind of picking up some momentum here, getting some traction.
Yeah.
It's going to really take
off. It's heating up.
Yeah. And then
it's red hot.
He says another factor is that three of Wisconsin's top five economic sectors involve the paper and printing industries. And the fortunes of these companies depend on newspapers, which are struggling. But you know what? That's not going to change. People aren't going to start suddenly buying newspapers again. They're not going to run down to the newsstand and, you know,
so
buy
the what's the governor's plan
edition.
On that one?
Nothing. He's
going to buy a lot more newspapers.
He just says this is the state's going to subscribe to 100,000 newspapers. But we'll clip the coupon. So.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Now you're talking.
Okay. And so now we're getting to the part that really kind of
cheesed you?
Boiled my bunny here.
Yeah, okay.
Madison is also Wisconsin's second largest city. And then he gets on the old canard about, you know, the anti-business, anti-development attitude here and the anti, you know, and all the.
Yeah, look how they're knocking all those buildings down here. They really were against any kind of development.
You know, I mean, for decades, Madison has been one of the driving engines of the economy in the state.
Yeah, well, talk to your buddy, former President Bush, about how he managed to screw over
our Silicon Valley of stem cells.
No, let's not even go there.
Yeah, so, okay, so, so anyway, but so then he, you know, so he's still kind of blaming the Madison.
Yeah,
you know,
we're mean.
We won't, you know, we can't put two bricks together.
We make mean faces at business people.
And finally,
let's
not forget the protests. Business leaders like stability, and they're unlikely to invest money or hire new workers when times are chaotic, as they were in Wisconsin through the June 12th recall elections. So,
Deutschland, Deutschland.
It was the protests that's keeping
we need more stability.
Keeping the jobs.
We need the trains to run on time.
Really take
that's
it off.
That's your problem.
Most business people don't believe it's extreme to ask public employees to contribute to their health care and their pension costs. Now, I know we had to fight this a lot 2 years ago. You actually were writing to the New York Times reporter
about that.
New York Times,
we were talking to Brian Williams.
That was not the issue.
No.
The issue was the
deunionization.
People's rights.
And don't forget the original budget bill was supposedly going to be reviewed and passed within 9 days, and it had some provisions that actually when the Senate Democrats left the state and people started looking at it, were going to basically give away power plants to the Koch brothers and stuff. I mean, it had nothing to do with this issue about giving
the
back
budget,
any money.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a power grab, and it's been a power grab since day one.
Yeah.
So if you want some stability, stop electing people that basically treat the government like it's their piggy bank.
Yeah.
That might help.
So this column from Larry.
Larry
just talked. All Larry did was have a bunch of excuses. Saying, yeah. He starts out saying, "No, the business climate's really getting
pretty good.
It's pretty good. It's getting good. I'm going to tell you why it's good." And then he tells you, you know,
because Minnesota's better.
And because the protests and
people in Madison are mean,
and they don't like businesses. So even though, as I said, we are one of the key economic.
Here's the thing about this thing with the business. Yes, I'm like Thoreau. I admire the person who takes the initiative. I admire the person who has the idea, works things, you know, day in and day out. I mean, this is what made, you know, the United States such a powerful economic entity throughout most of its history. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about people that basically use the government, gigantic amounts of money, to put more money in their pockets. They want to screw people over. I mean, you know, it's
usually just by wedging themselves in between transactions.
Right.
I want to get my crumbs here every time you go to the ATM or every time you go to the gas station. You know, right. I need my 5 cents or my 2 cents.
Right. It's not as if we're even talking about creating. When you're talking about these job creation, I mean, we could be having job creation right now, except companies are sitting on gigantic amounts of cash. They don't want to put any money into anything. I can understand that, but that's because business people are motivated by a base human desire. They want to make money for themselves. Yeah. That's great. That's what people are like, and that's what motivates them. I'm fine with that. I don't need to worship them or thank them for that. Tomorrow, if robots could do it all, robots would be doing it all. That's all you need to know.
Plus,
why do we have to like engage in some kind of cult of the worship of the business person?
Well, yeah, it's not a religion. I mean, it doesn't mean that, you know, because that works for in a lot of ways. And again, you know, I think, you know, the free enterprise and all that stuff is wonderful, and go out and, you know, start your little balloon bouquet delivery business or whatever floats your boat.
Right.
And, you know, and it's a great system for getting a cheap bag of nails.
Yeah.
But it's a lousy system for getting health care for grandma. I mean, and somebody, you need to acknowledge that once in a while. Meanwhile, in Salt Lake City,
our nation's capital,
compulsory education laws have resulted in parents disengaging themselves from the responsibility to oversee the education of their children and have caused schools to falter under the burden of being all things to all people. That's according to State Senator Aaron Osmond of South Georgia.
So,
Jordan.
So which, which gigantic for-profit institutional school system is giving him money?
He's calling for the end of compulsory education in Utah.
Sure.
Some parents act as if the responsibility to educate and even care for their child is primarily the responsibility of the public school system.
Please, dear God, I would not be here today if that were not the case. If it were left up to my family to educate me, I'd be in like a closet somewhere, you know? I mean, I'd be shackled to the bed. I mean, I'm just like, no, this is ridiculous. I thank my lucky stars that being a teacher used to be a prestigious job because I had a lot of really nice, really good, very concerned teachers when I was growing up. And if I didn't have that, I wouldn't be where I am. I wouldn't have known there was another life out there.
Oh, yeah. I loved going to school because it was a stable environment. The adults were...
No protests?
There were no protests. the adults were, you know...
Very little gunplay.
fairly sane, you know, mostly sober.
Yeah.
You know, unlike the adults in my home environment, you know.
Yes, exactly. No, this is the thing that gets me about all this. If you're constantly saying, well, you know, these children of immigrants, we have to punish them for their parents. They didn't decide that. Or, you know, we got to yank food stamps because it creates a culture of dependency. Heck, if we hadn't had food stamps in this country, I wouldn't be here today.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how we ate for at least 2 years of my life was the fact that we had food stamps.
I mean,
am I supposed to suffer for my parents' sins?
We had the ridiculous example of Paul Ryan last year. I mean, it came out that he's where he is today because of Social Security. Survivor benefits. His dad died when he was in high school, and he would have never gone anywhere if he hadn't had that little boost.
I have to say that when you said that, I suddenly thought of like a Marvel superhero, the ridiculous Paul Ryan.
lunging out of the screen.
Trying to grab money out of your hand.
Well, this is a related story here. School privatization laws crafted by corporate interests have been introduced in nearly every state in the first half of 2013.
And they just want your money. They just want your money.
This is going to
shareholders.
This is according to the Center for Media and Democracy. 43 states and the District of Columbia are considering school legislation developed by the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC, as we've come to know and love them here in Wisconsin. That's the umbrella organization that pushes state laws catering to business interests on a myriad of topics.
And again, it's just money from your pocket. It's corporate welfare.
Yeah, there's a new Center for Media and Democracy report, Cashing In on Kids. It details 139 separate ALEC-designed bills promoting for-profit education. Three states have considered school voucher programs. Hey, that sounds like us. And 10 have taken up another ALEC measure that funnels public dollars to private schools via tax credits. Three states have considered the Virtual Schools Act, which spends taxpayer money on an online education model that few educators think works for young kids. Mm-hmm. And then there's the so-called parent trigger laws designed by ALEC. And
That sounds like a nice combo thing there. that has the word trigger in it.
That'll motivate him. Oh, man.
Yeehaw.
So, yeah. So, there's a lot more here, but I think you get the idea.
When are we moving?
You know, the week you were gone, we got an email from someone that was actually seriously asking Floyd and me, you know, is it time to cut bait and move somewhere? And, you know, Floyd advertised himself as being able to answer any question, and this person sent that in, and we couldn't answer it. It's like, you know, it's maybe getting close where, it's just... The game is rigged so much.
That's it. It's the game is rigged. That's a good way of putting it. Hey, Queen Elizabeth did something she's never done before.
Had a baby.
No, she's done that four times.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, she did something this week that she's never done before. She legalized gay marriage. Oh, yes, she said. No, she gave a... You know, the house, remember I told you about the House of Lords?
Did she have the power to do that?
Well, what happened was the Parliament did it, but she needs to approve it. No, by the way, no monarch has vetoed an act of parliament since 1707.
Wow.
Yeah, Queen Anne got really, I think she was in a bad mood that day. Not so much. But
that was just the menu for the day.
Yeah, exactly. But remember I told you a couple weeks ago, it's been maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago now, that they were debating the gay marriage bill in the House of Lords, the upper house of the British Parliament. And what was funny about it was, this is the House of Lords, which is just like an hysterical concept in and of itself. But they were all like telling stories about like lovers.
They're
that
gay
they had
lovers.
And stuff like that. It's like, okay, not so much. We don't want to hear about this, really. But it passed the House of Commons. And Queen Elizabeth has to give her royal seal of approval to any law. I mean, it's officially the case. And so it passed on Tuesday, rather. And the royal assent was given on Wednesday. Mm. And the House of Commons Speaker, John Bierko, announced that this week. So now it's official. I have to say I was amused by this. So Dominique Strauss-Kahn, remember the guy who was the former head of the IMF, who was basically involved in a bunch of sex scandals and culminating in this one where he was accused of assaulting a maid in New York. He has a new job. He's... He's now an executive at Rosneft. It's the Russian state oil company. That seems just about right.
Yeah. The United Nations says Western commercial oil exploration in Somalia could spark further conflict in the African nation. So the oil companies are disputing over who owns licenses and who owns what property and who can drill where. So... keep that on your radar there. That'll be our next freedom fighting expedition there.
Yeah, of course, next time we'll have it's going to be entirely private military, but...
Is that it?
Yeah, I think that's in the cards.
Those guys from Arizona.
Leonard Garment passed away this week. Do you remember Leonard Garment? He was a Wall Street litigator. He was one of Richard Nixon's law partners.
Mm.
He belonged to the law firm of Mudge, Stern, Williams, and Tucker. And he became a partner in
Shyster and Flywheel.
Yes, in 1957. And he headed the litigation department and represented mainly Wall Street clients. And it was this law firm that brought him together with Richard M. Nixon, the former vice president. He had just finished running for governor of California in 1963, and he joined the practice. And even though they were really different, Garment was a liberal Democrat, and Nixon was Nixon. And... They got along fine. And so when Nixon won the presidency in 1968, he said, hey, you know, you're a good lawyer. I've seen you in action. Would you like to be my lawyer? Would you like to be White House counsel? And he said, yeah, sure, I'll do that.
How hard could that be?
How hard could that be? He was an odds and ends utility man. He did some policy advising. He was a talent scout. He was the guy that found John Mitchell. Mm. That was a good one. He did a good job there. That was Nixon's campaign manager, and later was the Attorney General of the United States. And a crook. Yeah, well, among that. But he was also the guy, most importantly, he was the guy that said to the president two very important things. He said, whatever you do, don't destroy those tapes because that's evidence, and destruction of evidence is wrong. And apparently Nixon had just enough conscience in him that he thought, yeah, that smart Jew knows something. So he didn't destroy the tapes. And then the other thing he said was,
he would have put a couple of adjectives
yeah,
in there.
I left that out for our radio audience.
Okay.
The other thing is, this is a very interesting thing I never heard of before. You remember there was the famous 18 and a half minute gap. Mm-hmm. This was a crucial right. White House tape where basically they were talking about the Watergate burglary and other illegalities, and it was mysteriously missing. They've tried to recover that information. Apparently, Nixon originally planned to fabricate a tape that recorded over that 18 and a half minutes. And then we're going to go bowling and have a couple of brewskis. And
like a little theater thing.
Yeah, I don't know. And Garman said, no, don't do that. And Nixon said, all right. You
know? Oh, that's funny.
I read that. I was like, man, the gift that keeps on giving. I was just like, that's just bizarre.
Let's put on a show.
Yeah, I know. So he was 89 when he died. That was pretty good. And one of the little known things about him is he was he loved to play the jazz clarinet. He basically learned to do that back when he was a young man. He was very gregarious, and he loved jazz. And he loved he worked on human rights issues both in and outside of the administration. And he was originally from Brooklyn. And I'm sure if you'd heard some of the things that Nixon had to say about Jews, he probably would have dropped his dentures. But, you know. But there you go. People are multi-sided, and no one more than the former president.
That's right. If you follow the Pope on Twitter, you can get some indulgences and cut your time off of purgatory.
Oh, thank goodness.
I thought they got rid of purgatory. No, they got rid of limbo.
No, limbo's gone. Purgatory's still here.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. The papal court handling pardons for sins says contrite Catholics may win indulgences by following World Youth Day on Twitter.
All right.
A court of the Catholic Church says that the faithful cannot obtain lesser punishment just by chatting online.
Yeah.
But in its latest attempt to keep up with the times, the Vatican has married one of the oldest traditions, the selling of indulgences, to social media. So just follow the Pope. And
there's not enough people following his tweets. I think that's what he's upset about.
He's
we'll put some indulgences in there.
He's a little desperate there. So.
Get him up.
We've tried selling indulgences on our fundraisers here, but that never seems to work very much.
Yeah, so. I think the people listening to our show revel in their sins. I mean, they know that you know, heaven for the climate, but hell for the company, you know? I mean, it's kind of, that's their attitude. Heaven's nice, but I mean, you know, who are you going to talk to?
All my friends are.
Yeah, I mean, all the interesting people are in hell. I mean.
More than 40% of Australians do not know how long it takes the Earth to travel around the sun.
It's a trick question.
30% did not
know. It doesn't travel at all.
30% did not know if humans lived at the same time as dinosaurs.
Yeah, well, that's a problem we have in this country.
Yeah, so, well, it's Australia, so.
Yeah. They're a lot like us in Australia.
They
actually.
Are, yeah. Oh, and some scientists are talking about this global warming, and they're saying that we were talking about lizards earlier.
Yeah.
That global warming.
We love the lizards.
Global warming could lead to giant lizards.
Cool.
Yeah, because they looked back in the millions of years ago, 40 million years ago, where it was really hot.
So they're in their time machine.
And then they had giant. Yeah. How do they know what was going on 40 million years ago?
Yeah.
So, but they found
that
there were giant lizards back then.
Yeah.
And so now they're thinking that modern day reptiles might grow larger as global temperatures continue to rise.
Very nice.
So,
that has to do with probably preserving their body heat and so on.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
So when we're at like the Willie Street Fair here, we'll hand out giant lizards.
You know, do they have gummy lizards? Because I was thinking
we should get some gummy lizards.
We should get some lizards carved in the medium.
I'm sure they do.
The medium of gummy.
I'm sure they do.
Because I know they got gummy worms and gummy rats. I mean, they got gummy everything else. They're bound to have, like, gummy geckos or something.
Oh, I'm sure we can find some.
Yeah.
Hey, there's a small business technology trade group that's lobbying Congress to ease some key immigration laws.
Okay. And
it's a small business technology trade group run by Microsoft.
Ah, well, so, yes.
kind of behind the scenes.
Yeah, it's like a mom-pa operation.
All right, I think it's time for us to declare. It's the weekend.
Yay!
In Emerald City. So get outside. It's nice. It's warm, but it's nice.
It's better, yeah.
Yeah. Get some of that nice hot air and go smell the lakes. That's what I like to do.
Mmm. Rotting. I love the smell of rotting.
I like it when they mow the lakes. That's my favorite thing in the world.
That's what I wait for.
The city employees out there on that little thing that mows the lakes. And it's like, that's just priceless.
Right. So. But my lawn's green. That's what's most important. Yeah. So.
All right, stick around. The kiosk is next. After that, Who Cooks for You with the Real Jaguar. After that, Amy Goodman, Democracy Now.
Oh, yeah.
Labor Radio.
You bet.
Blues and some other stuff. And all that great weekend programming here on WORT.
You're all lizard station.
We'll do an all lizard show next week.
You bet.
All right, thanks for listening. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, August 1st.
This is Bird Note. I'm Ade Ben Salahuddin, and in June of 2022, I worked as a volunteer research assistant on a tiny island off the coast of Maine with the National Audubon Seabird Institute. This was during peak hatch, the busiest time of the year at these breeding colonies. Common terns are the predominant species here, and thousands of them were emerging from their eggs. It's a very noisy place. But every once in a while, particularly in the evenings, the chorus would suddenly go dead silent as every adult tern dove over the rocky cliffs, deserting their young. Then, rising on air currents, they'd return. This strange behavior is called dreading, and it's not clear why terns do it. At first, I thought it was a response to a predator, but often, there's no threat to be seen. Some researchers have suggested it's a form of social bonding for the flock, to help them coordinate flight patterns for long-distance migratory journeys. Or, maybe, it's just for fun. If that's the case, it must be pretty entertaining, because terns will